Hello, folks, and welcome to the Halloween edition, the October 31st edition of the World Labor Hour right here on WEFT in Champaign, broadcast worldwide through our website at weft.org and through our FM transmitter at 90.1 on the FM dial. And we broadcast from beautiful downtown Champaign here, 113 North Market Street. And we're here with a pretty much full house, although David is up at a conference in Chicago, and we'll be talking to him in a little bit. But we got Bill Gorell here, one of the founders of the World Labor Hour here at WEFT. Also Gus Wood, labor historian, and also Angela's here to add a few comments at various times. So
I think I should be emeritus something.
You are emeritus.
Yeah, emeritus producer, because I'm not really producing anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Bill Gorell, emeritus producer of the World Labor Hour here. And this is Bob Polesny trying to do my best to fill in for Dave this week, but nobody can do this show like Dave does. So let's get to some underwriting here with Gus.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Cheney Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjobswithjustice.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide, recognizing that strong workers build strong communities. The AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
And the views and opinions expressed here are those of us speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associates, station manager, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. It's just us here, folks. So anyway, anybody got a story they want to kick it off with here this week?
Well, I know that people are talking about the local working issues right now in Champaign-Urbana. This past week, there was an attempted negotiation at Clifford Jacobs. For those that are not aware, the Clifford Jacobs union workers have been locked out of their workspace for over a month now.
70 of them that belong to three separate unions.
Yeah. 70 of them, and it's been over a month now, and they've been holding a 24-hour informational picket outside of the workspace. So 24 hours for the past month, just really wanting to go back to work and feed their families and take care of themselves. But the company has refused to negotiate fairly with them, and as of this past week, because of the issues, they're going to have to bring in a federal mediator to force the company to negotiate fairly. You know, I mean, like, negotiations are stalling. They're not even attempting to move. And these people are starting to suffer. You know, benefits are gone, you know, and unemployment is up in the air, unfortunately.
Right. So the companies refused to give them the unemployment, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So at this point, they're not getting, are they getting a strike pay, possibly?
Well, that's what we're working on, because they're locked out, though.
Right.
And not on
they're
strike.
They're not entitled to strike pay.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and the company has refused them the unemployment.
Well, they'll get the unemployment. It's a matter of time, but they'll get it.
They'll get it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I mean,
for a month now, like Gus says, this started September 29th, so.
Yeah. It will be tough.
Yeah.
You know, but the Staley people got it. Every time this has come up in a lockout that I've ever heard of, they got unemployment.
Yeah, they may get it after they go back to work, though, if the company keeps dancing around the issue here.
It's going to be a fight. And the main thing that the workers just want is to continue community support. You know, that's what,
right.
you know, the community and the local union and the workers have been out there with them since this all started a month ago. And, you know, this past week when we held a kind of a little smaller rally to kind of push forward progressive negotiations, there were a lot of people out there from different organizations and groups, and we just got to continue to do that. They also need firewood.
That's what I heard you guys. Yeah, you know, talking about firewood, it's getting cold out there.
Yeah. So if anybody that's listening can, you know, just go out and just say hello and just walk with them and talk with them. Or if you have the means to provide firewood or possibly some type of food or something, support them.
Food,
because, this isn't going away anytime soon. So we have to keep supporting.
At this point, maybe some hot coffee or chocolate or something like that.
I mean, really anything at this point, even if it's just coming by and saying hello and saying, we understand what you're going through. But these are people's lives that are just being totally affected at this point. And it's really scary.
Business manager, Ron Stanley, he's business manager with the Machinist Union. He said after they met 4 hours on Wednesday of this week, he said he was pretty pessimistic after the session, and that was when they decided to try and get the federal mediator in here.
And
it's kind of sad what's going on. He says we've made movement. He says we came in to get a resolution, we made movement, but the company has refused to make any movement. They wouldn't even give us a proposal that was different from what they gave us before. So that's what union business agent there, Ron Stanley, is saying about it. So it's kind of a shame what's going on. Clifford Jacobs, it says, was founded in 1919 in Urbana by two local partners. And like you say, it's been bought out by a Canadian company, IMT. And they were hoping for a ray of hope there because there was two work issues up at plants in Canada for the same company, and those have been resolved, correct?
Yeah, they're both already back to work now.
Yeah.
And from what we've heard is that there were no concessions, that they actually, the workers received what they wanted in their deals. So, you know, I mean, besides those two, also the resolution of the East St. Louis teacher strike a couple of days ago too, where the workers received received what they wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and this just goes to show you that as long as because I honestly believe that the Clifford Jacobs workers, that they're in struggle, and they're going to get what they want if they remain strong and if we continue to support them. Because that's what happened. East St. Louis, I mean, that was an ugly situation. And it was just resolved, and we can talk about that later in the news section, but they got a lot of the things that they were really, really demanding in there. And then by going on strike and remaining solidified, you know, the companies have to cave. They had to. It's too much power in worker solidarity.
Yeah.
And we just have to remember that in every type of demonstration we do.
Ron Stanley again said the mediator likely would meet separately with both sides. He says he'll come in and he'll talk to both sides. He doesn't have any authority to make either side do anything. He just tries to get both sides to move. He says it can be helpful if you're really trying to get something done, but if you're not, which I think the company is, I don't know how helpful it will be. So, and in the meantime, they brought in a bunch of replacement workers, or as we call them on this show, scabs.
Scabs, yeah, the lowest of the low. The thing, like when you're digging a trench and you find a septic tank. And at the bottom of the septic tank, after you dug through all of the human waste, there's something at the bottom that's been eating that waste. That's what a scab is.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody that takes the job of somebody else who's actively trying to improve their own conditions. I mean, you just don't get any lower than that.
Yeah.
And one thing I really love about this city is that it's a very anti-scab city.
Yeah.
You know, just the idea, even though everybody didn't come out, just when people found out about it, I heard from all different types of groups that they were disgusted that they actually went out and got 14 people outside of the city and brought them here to take those people's jobs. I mean, it's so disgusting. I can't even,
Here's a little commentary from Ann Feeney then.
There's an alien life form been creeping around my job site. Oh, they look almost human, but something about them ain't right. They just cross right over a picket line. Pay no attention to a picket sign. They're called scabs. Scabs. The lowest life form spawned in nature's lab. They got no brains.
they got no heart. Scabs are tearing our communities apart. They might be reptilian, the blood flows like ice in their veins. Or extraterrestrial recyclers that use shit for brains. Now what does it mean to have the right to strike when companies do anything they like using scabs? Scabs, the lowest form of life found in nature's lab. They got no brains, they got no heart. Scabs are tearing out.
Scabs, the lowest form of life. So anyway, we're back here and I think we got a story from Bill.
Well, one thing here is a little tidbit from a Facebook friend named Jim Dixon, who lives in Springfield and apparently formerly worked at the Department of Health Care and Family Services. And he says, my fellow Northern Union members need to understand that as the South goes, so goes the North. Hourly wage gap, South versus North, used to be $7 an hour and is now about $3 an hour. And that is not because wages went up in the South. It is because wages have dropped in the North. Get your union national leadership to help win the South or you too will lose the dream. We all do better when we all do better. And actually,
exactly.
he stole that from Jim Hightower, who stole it from his own father. It's what his dad used to say. And, then what I want to talk about is, spent the last 2 days north of Muhammad on Route 47, flagging. And, we had at least two people just run the signs.
Really?
Yeah. And there's, one of the problems is visibility. This time of year, the sun is really low in the South. And, so it makes it like, we have to have radios because when I look down the road, unless we're only, you know, about a couple, two, couple hundred feet apart, all I can see is just a silhouette. I can't tell which side of the sign is going. And people are having a problem with that. Drivers are. So you need to be really cognizant of it. One way is if you're on a piece of road that's got like brand new blacktop and all that, it's likely that there's going to be still work happening on it, especially this time of year, finishing up all the stuff, getting the side roads asphalted in. The crew I'm on is doing guardrails. Okay. And, anyway, you need to watch out. Yesterday I was almost run over, and here's another one too. I know it's tough. We had to do it with my dad, but if you have family members who are getting too old to drive, you need to do something about it. Yesterday I was almost run over by somebody who looked like she was about 90 years old. She didn't see me at all. Mm. She barely saw the crew on the road there, you know, and they got great big trucks and equipment.
Yeah.
You know, and, I tell you, it's tough. My dad, he drove his whole life, you know, professionally, and it was one of his favorite hobbies too. And, but we finally had to do it. And, you know, we were afraid somebody was going to get killed, including him.
Yeah.
You know, so. That's my message for today.
All right.
That's a tale from the front.
And this is something else. There you go. Tales from the front. New weekly feature here.
Well, possibly. My life isn't that interesting. And I may not be working for a while, you know, and you see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting winter.
Right.
From the unemployment front.
There you go. I'm going to put a caution out there like Dave did last week too. Be careful what you post on social media such as Facebook and stuff because, you know, as Dave said last week, the company up there that owns Clifford Jacobs has hired a company to monitor social media locally, and county sheriff has showed up at somebody's house asking questions about why they posted some comments on some Facebook pages here locally. So,
yeah, I've tried to avoid being drunk on Facebook. Couple of years.
But you know what? Though I believe that the police made up the Facebook in the first place so that they could keep, you know,
keep
in touch with
us.
What's going on.
He deleted it. That's what happened.
Just wanted everybody to shoot their mouth off on Facebook so they would know who's a radical or not.
Well, I mean, back 20 years ago. As a matter of fact, we're past the 20th anniversary of this show. That would have been in September on a Sunday, probably, or something, because we were doing alternate Sundays for about 6 months.
When this show started, it was on Sunday here?
Yeah, but it started like in September of 95, I believe. We never kept any records or anything. That was with the Staley lockout.
Right, in Decatur.
And at that time, this area was known as the Illinois Labor War Zone. At any one time, there was a Staley lockout, possibly cat strikes in multiple towns. A trailer company in Charleston went on strike towards the end of that era. And there, at that time, there was coordinated state police activity checking people out that were involved in these labor disputes.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a little piece of news.
The deep state has its tentacles everywhere.
Yeah. Here's a little piece of news that we didn't quite get to last week, and that was about the elections up in Canada, where Stephen Harper's decade of rule has come to an end. You know, conservative and
the liberal,
much more liberal, Justin Trudeau. Is he the son of Pierre Trudeau? Won the election, and actually,
his parents were like just super hip people back when I was in high school. You know,
Pierre Trudeau.
Yeah, they were sort of jet setters. I don't know. They're probably hanging out with Mick Jagger or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But overall, the liberals won 184 seats up there in Canada. And conservatives only brought in 99, and the NDP party 44. So by far, there the liberals won a quite convincing election and quite a turn of ruling up there in Canada. So it'd be interesting to see what happens up there.
Yeah, I would love to know what their platform or what their main objective in their campaign was, you know, when they were running.
It says in his victory speech, Mr. Trudeau sent out a message of unity to Canadians, continuing the positive approach he adopted during the campaign. The Liberals operated on the principle that you can appeal to the better angels of our nature and you can win doing it, he said. So, it says here, for Mr. Harper and the Conservatives, the loss came as a stern repudiation by voters and marks an end to their nearly 20-year hold on power, a polarizing stretch that has seen taxes cut, crime punished more severely, and a more combative role for Canada on the world stage. So, sounds kind of familiar.
Well, that except for the healthcare issue.
Yeah.
They're pretty, yeah. Yeah, they're starting to mirror the U.S. a bit, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, any other stories there, Gus? Did we want to? I can say a little bit about, Dave's going to call in here about half past the hour, and he's going to be reporting from the National Labor Campaign for Single Payer Healthcare Conference happening up in Chicago. And as it says here, 5 years after enactment of the Affordable Care Act, a coalition of groups including Physicians for a National Health Program, Healthcare Now, Labor Campaign for Single Payer, National Nurses United, and One Payer States says experience shows that the Obama health care law, which, remember, was written by the corporate health insurance industry, doesn't resolve our problems, and that the U.S. needs to finally join the rest of the industrialized world and adopt a single-payer Medicare for All health care program. Says, unfortunately, the Affordable Care Act is neither universal nor affordable. It will leave 26 million Americans uninsured and a comparable number underinsured, vulnerable to financial distress in the event of illness. Tens of thousands of people will continue to die every year just because they lack health insurance, and medical problems are the leading cause of bankruptcy in the U.S. Research shows that nearly 80% of those declaring bankruptcy due to medical debt had insurance at the onset of their illness. So what's happening up in Chicago here is several hundred union leaders, rank-and-file union member activists, going to be joined by 150 doctors, nurses, and other health professionals from Illinois and at least 35 other states, and they're going to be in Chicago for two large conferences of single-payer Medicare for All advocacy groups. So that's what Dave's up in Chicago doing, and he'll be calling in soon with a report.
Well, speaking of insurance, I had a little somebody had backed into my car like around June, and they had insurance in Chicago. And I'm just now getting in touch with these people last week, and now they're finally finna get my car fixed.
Wow.
So, I mean, I just don't understand. If you're paying your insurance every month faithfully,
yeah,
why is there such a long wait on, you know, getting things done?
4 or 5 months, well. Delay. They don't want to pay, so they try to drag that
stuff
up.
You pay your money on time, but they're not doing their job. Yeah. So, I mean, so, you know, that makes you wonder why you have to pay it if they're not going to do their job.
My dad had some semis years ago. Anyway, one of his truck drivers broke his leg somehow. And the workers' compensation insurance company, you see, in Illinois, it's private, which I think is ridiculous. It ought to be like unemployment, where it's administered by the state. But anyway, apparently somebody figured out they can make some money on that, but they can't make money on unemployment insurance, so it belongs to the private sector. And accordingly, they don't want to pay out.
Right.
And so this guy was, they were slow paying this guy, and my dad finally called him up, and he said, "Hey, look, what am I paying you for?"
Yeah.
You know, I'm paying you to take care of my people when they have an accident.
Right.
You know, so why don't you do this?
And you know what? That's what I had to call when I called and talked to them. Okay, it's finna get cold. I'm gonna have to drive around for the winter with my car messed up. I need my car, you know.
Is some of your windows smashed out or something?
No, they put a dent in it. My panel is off, and it's making kind of a, like a loud noise when I turn. Not good for the wintertime, you know.
No, if it's snowing out there, you don't want to have problems.
I definitely don't.
It might be pretty bad on your tire.
The Affordable Care Act did what the president and the federal government wanted. It empowered insurance companies to continue to exploit people on the ground. I mean, that's exactly what it was set up to do. And like you said, there's nothing universal about it except that it's universally oppressive.
Right. I mean, nothing affordable about
it. It's incredibly unaffordable.
Yeah.
And you know, you still have people going to the hospital now for things that they were born with that they can't get rid of. And if something happens, they have an asthma attack or something, they need medicine. I mean, their bills go up into the thousands, sometimes into the six figures, you know, for an emergency. Not understanding the idea that, well, they do understand the idea, but they're making profits off of it, that bodies break down. You know, human beings need medicine to continue to survive, and they're exploiting that purpose. And until we start having conversations around that and stop trying to frame this as being a reform issue and that there are bills, this we'll call it what it is. The system is set up to oppress people and to take advantage of our health. I mean, that's exactly what they're doing.
No, it definitely is. And then once you've taken the medicine so long, you're independent on it, so you really need it then.
And then you can't get it, and you find out heroin's cheaper. I mean, really, I'm serious, man. I mean, there's people in B-Mint. Okay, B-Mint, population 1,800, about halfway between Champaign and Decatur. Mm-hmm. There's people there right now charged with fraud, stealing from a church, telling them that they needed money for food or something, and then they spent the money on heroin, and they probably, you know, there might have been a gateway prescription drug there, you know, gateway drugs, gateway drugs. But it is largely known that that has become a big problem. You know, people can't get their OxyContin after a while, and somebody comes up with some heroin. Next thing you know, you got a whole little town with people dying from heroin overdoses.
Yeah, but they got some of the same ingredients. Churches. They got some of the same ingredients in there, don't they?
Dave sent out a story, I think this week, about how the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan has highly promoted the heroin use throughout the world.
That's where it's coming from.
Yeah.
We could do a whole show. Yeah, we could do a whole show on federal implications and the history behind the flooding of drugs into the United States. Yeah. I mean, we could do a series of shows on that and spend time on each drug.
Happened in L.A. with the crack and the cocaine and stuff like that, and the CIA was involved with that.
Well, yeah, and also what's going on in Mexico, which is somewhat aided and abetted by the United States, where that country has become an almost ungovernable, at least outside of probably Mexico City, an ungovernable place. And that's largely the fault of the United States. And you notice the United States always works both sides. They're doing it right down the Middle East, and they're probably doing it in Mexico.
All right. I believe our caller, Dave, is calling in here on the line, so we'll get him up here. Hello, Dave?
Yes.
Hey. All right. We're pleased to welcome a host, normal host of the show, David Johnson, to the World Labor Hour here on WEFT in Champaign. How's it going up there in Chicago, Dave?
Good, Bob. I'm here in downtown Chicago at the Hilton Hotel on South Michigan Avenue for the National Labor Campaign for Single-Payer Healthcare Conference. This weekend, there's actually two different conferences going on that are kind of in conjunction. One is the National Labor Campaign for Single-Payer, and the other one is the Physicians for National Health Program. Lived up here yesterday, and that's about 4:30, there was a huge demonstration outside the office of Blue Cross Blue Shield, right across the street from Millennium Park. There was probably 500 to 600 people out there, police everywhere, Blue Cross Blue Shield corporate security standing inside the
door.
It was quite a boisterous rally and stuff, it was quite impressive. I wasn't sure when I came up here how many people were going to come out for that, but it was quite hard. I think those sort of things need to happen more often all over the country.
A lot of doctors and a lot of nurses up there speaking their mind, huh?
Indeed. In fact, a lot of the doctors wore their white scrubs. And it was they had a pretty large contingent, actually.
Quite a contrast between the doctors in their white scrubs and the corporate security folks up there.
Indeed. So, but anyway, and then last night, of course, they had a welcoming session. The vice president of the National Steelworkers Union spoke, as well as the national president of the National Nurses Union. And basically, it was just a kickoff. There's people here, rank and file union members, as well as local and state AFL-CIO and county AFL-CIO people from all over the country. A lot of media up here too. Of course, labor beats out, and we at the demonstration yesterday, a bunch of local Chicago television station trucks came out to film the event and everything. But today was the real kickoff. Today started out with a opening remarks by U.S. Congressman Jim McDermott from Washington State, who's been a very vocal advocate of single-payer health care for decades, and a host of other speakers, and then, of course, the workshops began shortly thereafter. So I just stepped out of one about the New York State, who has passed actually a single-payer bill in their General Assembly, their House, and they're getting ready for a contested battle next to try to get it passed in the New York Senate. So just learning some of their, taking notes, finding out, what they did to make that happen. And in fact, that's probably what the main purpose of this conference is to basically learn from each other, what people have done in other states, what their successes were, what their, some of their failures were. I also want to mention that our state rep, Carol Adams, is up here today, along with a staff member of the Laborers Union, from Bloomington, Illinois, and there's some other people also I bumped into up here from Champaign, in central Illinois. So I was actually I knew Carol was coming, but I didn't know about some of the other people. So, word's gotten out, and we're just hoping to, make this as actually a kickoff, for the, year to come.
Yeah. There is a group in Illinois too, right? Illinois Single Payer?
That's correct. There's the Illinois Single Payer Coalition, which is primarily based in Chicago, but also has a presence in a little bit downstate. But also there's a huge contingent of the National Nurses Union up here who's been doing a lot through their own union. Doctors and nurses, the majority of doctors and nurses are behind single-payer health care, Medicare for All, because they have to deal with these issues every day of people coming in with no insurance or some of the crappy Obamacare policies that won't cover a lot, or that have very high deductibles, people have to come to the emergency room, people that can't afford treatment, that can't afford medication. There's, that's a big aspect of it. And so they see this every day. And, if they're only halfway decent human beings, they're going to be affected by this.
Well, Dave, I think what this has done is kind of forced a lot of physicians into basic, who used to be independent practices, into basically being employees.
Yeah.
Because the hassle of billing. Dealing with 1,500 insurance companies and they don't want to pay. You know, it would be so much easier if they could just send a bill to one place and it would be reasonably looked at and paid.
Indeed. And in fact, U.S. Congressman Jim McDermott from Washington threw out a fact I wasn't aware of, that there's something, it's $24 billion a year is spent just on unnecessary paperwork because of all the different insurance company entities.
Wow.
Entities constantly trying to, negotiate down the prices they're paying to hospitals, doctors, and other providers, and also just denying claims and just making it much more difficult, more cumbersome, more expensive.
Well, Dave, I tell you, the paper blizzard that is generated by about any time I get any medical care done by the central laborers, insurance office, and the hospitals. You know, anymore, I just wait till I get the call from the collection agency. Then I figure it has finally settled up. You just get so much stuff. It just buries you. I mean, it almost deters me, from going and getting medical care.
Yeah, you get bills from three or four different entities when you go to any hospital.
God, Carl is a nightmare. Carl cannot be one thing.
No.
I don't know why.
You're paying the clinic, you're paying the hospital, you're paying this and that and the doctors and the group and the everything, yeah.
You know, back when I remember when I was a kid, you know, and everybody could afford to pay out of pocket. You went to this guy. The very first doctor we had was working out of his house in Isdale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Then the next one was Doc Scott, and he had a storefront in Bement, and he had a nurse/receptionist.
Yep.
And the two of them, that was it. Now you go somewhere, and there's like some huge building, and there's, you'd see like three or four people.
It's like an assembly line, yeah.
I don't know.
That's, you know what this is, this topic has come up at the conference, basically the further, corporatization of healthcare. I mean, everything from the passage of the Obamacare Affordable Care Act, but not just that, but, one phenomenon I wasn't familiar with is now a lot of, plans, like say for different labor unions, are being forced to basically go to only certain places for their members who, to get their, medications. They were talking about, that now they're, and those places usually are national chain pharmacies like CVS or Walgreens. Hence what's happening is they've cut the big corporate healthcare, industries have cut a deal with the big corporate nationwide pharmaceutical companies, and the effect of this, of course, is to eventually it's going to be putting out of business all the small independent pharmacies out there.
Just this week, Walgreens announced that they were going to try and buy out the Rite Aid chain of stores, so there'd be two huge conglomerates, Walgreens and CVS, and they're going to, we'll see what they decide on that kind of stuff, but that's just ridiculous. Yes.
Yes. Sort of tell from the front before we called it that about 2 or 3 weeks ago about the $506 tube of skin ointment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes. And it's interesting because, the vice president of the National Steelworkers Union was mentioning in his remarks last night that of all his negotiations around the country with some of the, you know, their big employers like Alcoa, Bethlehem Steel, a lot of the other ones, it's all coming down pretty much to healthcare. I mean, this is the contentious issues in almost every single negotiation he's in. And basically, with these employers are being, you know, squeezed, you know, more and more by the insurance companies. And so now they're wanting to basically, they don't want to have any legacy, what they call legacy costs. In other words, they don't want to pay for any healthcare for any retirees. That basically, once you retire, they're done with you. And in addition to that, they want all their current employees, or they want the union, basically, to accept that all their current employees are going to go into Obamacare bronze plans, which are substandard insurance policies.
Well, and isn't this before the 40% tax that's coming up? When is that going to be? Is that next year?
Oh, yes. the so-called Cadillac.
Cadillac tax.
One speaker phrased to turn Chevys into Cadillacs, or actually
Pintos into Cadillacs.
Chevettes.
Yeah, so what this is in fact going to do is it's going to hit the building trades in particular hard because they're what's called Taft-Hartley plans. They're multi-employer health care plans. And what its function is to basically, over time, tax them completely out of existence. This is also going to affect what they call cooperative health care plans that are around, some around the country, and real, and I emphasize the term real, non-for-profit, healthcare plans as opposed to the phony, that I have a non-profit, tax and legal structure that really are, money-making institutions. I want to differentiate between those two. Basically it's going to tax any, insurance provider out in, entity out of existence unless they're a corporate health insurance company. And now we're seeing all sorts of mergers and consolidations with the big, healthcare companies out there to where basically we're coming almost into a monopolistic situation here as far as the health insurance industry.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're fighting here, again, is corporate power and they're bought and paid for politicians. So this is what the challenge is that basically we've got to build a movement. We've got to do it through the labor movement, of course, where they don't just get lip service to the whole issue of providing, of supporting Medicare for all, single payer, but to actually donate money, and more importantly, to educate and mobilize their membership to actually fight for it. In other words, to pressure, their elected representatives and, you know, support any other actions that would be necessary to try to get bills passed in individual states. It's pretty much a consensus here that nothing's going to change at the national level because ultimately what we need here is a national single-payer healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that's probably going to happen is if that state by state you enact these systems in place and then word gets out of their effectiveness and then other states want to enact as well, or at least I should say the people in those states find out about it. So it's pretty much because right now corporate lobbyists and corporate money has Washington, D.C., both Democrats and Republicans pretty much all tied up. I'm not saying every single legislator in Washington is that way, but the vast majority are. So this is as far as a practical strategy position. The fight is probably going to be on a state-by-state level. Some states are quite a ways along, like Vermont and New York. California is not far behind. And not too far behind them is Oregon, Washington, and believe it or not, Minnesota. So that's one reason why they wanted to have a national conference here. It's because nationwide, everyone believes Illinois should be much farther along than where it is now.
Oh, God. Illinois Democratic. But anyway, Dave, I just want to mention you said something about the unions needing to really be pushing this. You mentioned at the beginning that there was a somebody from Local 362 in Bloomington there. And I've known or been acquainted with Mike for quite some time, and he has a somewhat unique position. As far as I know, in the labor union.
Yeah, this is actually.
I know of no other locals who have somebody like Mike.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes. And I can't remember the guy's name.
It's Mike Matika.
Yeah, but who's the one instead of the laborers union over there? Last name of Penn?
Oh, Penn. I can't remember which Penn it is, but there's, John Penn's also, leader of our district council.
Okay. Yeah, they said Deidre.
So all the people who train us a lot of time, they seem to be from Bloomington now.
Okay. They actually sent Deidre here, who is Jermaine White's niece. She's been working as a staffer for the Laborers Union now, the Bloomington Laborers Union, for about 6 years. And she said that they told me an interesting story this morning when I saw her and Carol Ammons right before everything started. But she was saying that the national president of the team, the laborers, Terrence O'Sullivan, I guess, had a falling out with Obama on this whole Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare thing.
Well, he should. I'm glad he's doing that.
Yes. And I guess Obama won't even return his phone calls anymore. Well, before, they used to have a quite, at least he'd get his phone calls returned. So.
Yeah, maybe he needs to do like, his predecessor, Arthur Coya, did and give him a bag of golf clubs. With Bill Clinton.
Indeed. But the other consensus here is that besides the labor movement, also physicians and nurses need to get nurses are organized. A lot of physicians, there's very few physicians that are organized in the unions, but physician groups need to expand their numbers as far as the physicians for national health policy. But even more important than all that is that it has to come. People have to get on, be first of all aware of what Medicare for All is, and they need to organize and fight for it, which means door to door. That means canvassing on the street, and we need to get just everyday ordinary people involved in this. Even if it's going to take the the sort of the long process of doing one-on-ones with people, in the streets, at their doors, or whatever. But one way or another, we have to build this movement.
Well, Dave, is not healthcare probably the second largest industry in Champaign County? Don't you think, besides the university? Our agriculture, maybe the third. It's a huge industry in this town. I don't know how many people are employed in it.
I think he's gone. I think
Off? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I'll just rant to the audience here.
There you go.
I was hoping to tell Dave that, here he comes back.
He's on the other line this time.
Ah.
Dave, you back?
Yes, I am. Somehow my call got dropped.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, anyway, Dave, what I was just starting to say is healthcare is a huge industry in this town.
Yep.
Yes, second after the University of Illinois.
It is. Okay. Well, anyway, I would, if those National Nurses Union, if they want to come down here and organize, man, I'm all for it. I'd help them out as much as possible because I'm, as I age and members of my family age, I've been spending more and more time in healthcare facilities around here. And tell you the truth, I want those people to be well taken care of. I want them to be well rested and well compensated.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yes, and Bill, it's so funny. I was just thinking of that same thought myself. In fact, before I leave the conference here, I'm going to get together with somebody from the Chicago National Nurses Union and basically tell them just that. Because I think there's a great opportunity. And not just Champaign-Urbana, also Bloomington-Normal, Decatur.
Springfield.
Georgia, Danville. I mean, Matthew and Charleston. So if you take that all into one sort of ball of wax, if you will, I would think make it worth your time to come down here and try to organize. And I think that would be definitely a huge step forward.
The NNU has been a very active union lately, so it'd be good to see them in the area, definitely.
Indeed. Okay, well, I will be back next week, and anything else that happens during the course of the day, I'll be more than happy to give a short follow-up report when I get back next Saturday. And is Gus there today?
Yeah, Gus is here.
Okay.
Say hi, Gus.
Okay, Gus.
Yeah.
I just want to say hello, and I'll see you next week.
Yeah, definitely, man. Yeah.
Thanks for calling in, Dave. Learn a lot up there and bring back some interesting things for us to share with our audience next week or following weeks of all the tales you're learning from the other folks, other states around the country, and how this movement is moving forward here.
Hey, Dave.
Take care.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Hey, you know what? I wanted to say something as far as this healthcare or whatever. I believe that, the doctors are so swamped with so many patients that they don't have the time and precision to just sit there and go through every single patient's history. So then they're making mistakes. Hmm. And then there comes lawsuits. So this is what the problem is, because they're dealing with so many people, they can't get it right. And so then those lawsuits come in, and then that right there is the whole big problem.
I heard a doctor talking a couple of years ago, and he said on average most diagnoses are made within about 10 seconds of the doctor beginning a conversation with the patient. Mm-hmm. And you can't tell me that they can diagnose what's wrong with you in 10 seconds. There's just no way. If you take your car in or anything else, your computer in for repair, it takes people hours sometimes,
See, part of it is they do have really good access to information now with computerization. And also you're kind of pre-screened by somebody else, and they ask you what's wrong. They already know what's...
run a lot of tests many times and stuff.
Well, but they've also...
X-rays, MRIs, and...
got information from the person you first talked to when you come in. That's why you're here and blah, blah, blah. And so they can be formulating an opinion while they're walking to see you.
Yeah.
Well, they told my cousin. My cousin, by the way, is still in the hospital from June 4th. You know, she had woke up out of a coma and everything, but she's still in the hospital right now.
I've also found, too, that what I'm going to start doing is requesting specialists much sooner.
Yeah.
I had a terrible experience over an ear infection a couple of years ago that would have been taken care of much sooner and much less painfully if I had seen a specialist. This general practitioner, Matt, at one point she was having me use these ear drops that were that had hydrochloric acid.
Wow.
I mean, it burns.
I bet. We're going to go to another quick commentary here from our friend and artist, musician, Ann Feeney, and National Healthcare Now. We'll be back with a couple more stories after this. National Healthcare Now from our friend of the show, Ann Feeney. She was just on earlier this year once, and she's welcome back anytime here. But got a little bit of a news story here from Gus and maybe some commentary from Angela, and we're going to invite you to stick around after the Union Edge today. We got this a new show that's going to run once in a while here periodically on WEFT, and it's called WEFT Vision 2020, WEFT Vision 2020, featuring WEFT board member Sandra Otten, and it's a five-year plan to make WEFT even better than it is already. So stick around. She's going to be on the air. She's going to have as a guest today board chair Vicki Nyswander. And she's going to periodically have different folks on there, an alumni spotlight, a program spotlight, different air shifters on the air, and even take some phone calls and stuff like that for you. So stick around. That's at 1 o'clock after the Union Edge. But we got something coming from Gus right now.
Well, I know those of you that I wasn't here last week didn't get some of my interesting commentary on a lot of the stuff that's going on right now in regards to police. There's been a consistent message and propaganda strategy used by the capitalist and, quite frankly, corporate world to push this idea of an assault on police. You know, they're trying to push this idea repeatedly in people's heads that police are
it's
being attacked.
Assault on police? Yeah, or do we have that backwards? Yeah. It's a police assault on the citizens.
Well, it's actually interesting because FBI Director James Comey came out and he's actually been doing kind of a round of talks across the country. On October 23rd at the University of Chicago Law School, Director James Comey declared that, quote, something deeply disturbing is happening all across America, end quote. What Comey found so disturbing was not that hundreds of unarmed people in the United States are killed by police every year, and the numbers are rising, and that every day in cities and towns across the country, cops are abusing and attacking workers and young people. What he denounced as deeply disturbing was the fact that these crimes are being exposed by means of videos posted on the internet and opposed by protesters demanding that killer cops be brought to justice. In his speech at the University of Chicago, as well as a follow-up speech on October 26th at the International Association of Chiefs of Police conference in Chicago, Comey argued that increased scrutiny of the police in the aftermath of the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, led to a nationwide increase in violent crime. He complained of a, quote, chill wind blowing through American law enforcement over the last year, end quote, and declared that, quote, in today's YouTube world, officers are reluctant to get out of their cars and do the work that controls violent crime.
Good. I just wanted to bring up what this is been a huge social meme that's been, as a matter of fact, this goes back to a Senator Vandenberg once saying, if you get anything you want from the American people, if you scare them enough.
Mm-hmm.
So they want mm-hmm. you to fear violent crime, especially mm-hmm. large black men. Mm-hmm. And, they also want you to, and the police, and it's always this thing with police. You see it from them all the way through our foreign policy. Everything's on the table.
Yep.
You have to react immediately and yep. establish your dominance in a situation. Mm-hmm. And if there is any resistance at all, it has to be crushed immediately.
And that goes back to this idea of the relationship of resistance to oppression. People always are trying to figure out why, since the so-called social movement, which Black Lives Matter started, and all these different groups that have been resisting and talking about police brutality have manifested, and why the police killings have escalated, is because if you look at how resistance works in relation to neoliberal agendas, you have to suppress any type of democratic or resistant movement, and that's why you have an increase in police violence. So what Comey's statements, the clear implication of Comey's statements is that whoever uncovers police criminality, whether a bystander with a cell phone camera or a newspaper that exposes police corruption, what they do is they serve to protect. This is what Comey is saying, that these people serve to protect violent crime and they must be suppressed. That's what he's arguing in all these different talks. He's arguing for a police state, which we exist in, and he wants to expand it. Comey's statements are a full-throated defense of the reign of police violence in working-class communities across the U.S. Tens of thousands of people have lost friends, family, and loved ones at the hands of cops who get away with murder. And residents of poor and working class neighborhoods confront in the police a massively armed occupying force. And we saw some of that in Champaign this week when mm-hmm. the MRAP, which right is a there. Giant military vehicle
right.
that literally can take up multiple parts of the roads. I mean, this thing right. is a giant tank.
Right there on Bradley Avenue.
Yeah, it was brought out this week. Just for a hostage, for a hostage yeah, situation right. or a police standoff.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they brought out a tank for a police standoff yes. with one individual. Utterly ridiculous.
A 17-year-old kid.
Did they eventually just talk him out?
He's evidently in youth detention right now.
Now he's in youth detention. He's not even they're going to keep him in youth detention, and it's probably going to be a slap on the wrist thing or whatever happened. But the thing is the reason they brought the tank out was to show their power. See, they wanted to show domination, that we're going to bring this tank out and we're going to make it seem like, okay, we're protecting the people so that we give our consent for them to do so. And that's what Max Weber talks about, this idea of domination and power and the consent of the people to allow this type of oppression to happen. but it's utterly ridiculous and it's exploitative. And Comey is backing his garbage up. And after a minute, I'm going to talk about why he's saying it and what the implications are for the future.
Yeah, but you know what? The reason they're steady killing innocent people is because there's nothing being done about it. If I had a say so and I was up and had power, I would put those same police that are killing people, I would put them right in population with everybody else.
I would actually take it further in that they're not doing anything because violence is as American as apple pie in this country. I mean, I'm just being honest.
Is that Trap Brown?
But let's be honest though. If you go back in history all the way up until like less than like 30 years ago, when there was a dispute of any kind, it was handled in this country through violence. Oh, okay. So it's a foundational part of this country.
Yeah. Well, the American labor history is notably more violent than at least European.
Exactly. And that's the point that we have this. And that's when people talk about American exceptionalism, we have to talk about it in the sense that our culture is rooted in this country going back to the 1600s in
Martin
violence.
Luther King.
Everything.
All that. Yeah. You know what?
We talk about the Ludlow Massacre out there in Colorado when they had the National Guard firing into tents and stuff like that.
I mean, and that's
Olive when the National Guard again, the Illinois Guard shot up the train and stuff like that and all the protesters.
Because that's how things are done in this country. I mean, that's the last resort. And that's my argument. And if you look at the history and you really put it into perspective, a lot of people talking about textbooks and the problems with textbooks. If you read between the lines of textbooks, all they show is how violent our culture is. And it started back in the 1600s. I mean, that's what we have to face when we talk about police killings and military weaponry and stuff. This is just a new form of technology, the way that violence is expanding from something that has always been historically present in our foundation.
Well, I'm calling for Labor History Month, but I wouldn't want it to be all candy-coated like some other history months have occasionally become through the media.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you brought that up because guess what?
I want to know about the because they won't talk about the massacres.
Exactly. And that brings me.
Even if they did that.
Up at the McCormick plant up in Chicago and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
at the Pullman factory.
All that stuff. I mean, that stuff is, we're pushing hard to get that stuff in textbooks. But again, when you have a federal government that won't recognize this, because on October 27th, President Obama did not mention Comey's remarks and reiterated his administration's defense of the police. He began by eulogizing the police, declaring, quote, "You serve and protect to provide security so many Americans take for granted," end quote. He concluded, "May God protect our cops." That's the words of President Barack Obama. He has never denounced any policeman that has killed any innocent civilian, but he says, "May God protect our cops."
Well, but the I know a lot of Republicans are saying he really meant "May Allah protect our cops."
Yeah, well, we don't know what he's up against. I mean, he's the president, but if he wants something to be done or wants to discuss something, if Congress or the Senate doesn't agree on it, then it's not going to happen.
And it's not even the fact that the thing's being done. We're talking about strictly discussion. We're talking about saying things. Let's be honest. He has 1 year left, and he's got his feet kicked up at this point. I mean, let's be honest.
Yes. He still hadn't taken all their guns yet.
Oh,
you know, and put everybody in FEMA camps. And what happened to Jade Howe?
That's the thing. It's not about getting, if he says something and he denounces police violence against black and brown people, that would be a historic catastrophic wave that the administration of the United States admits that there is an oppressive state that targets people and kills them. He has not done that and he won't do that. So it's even without, outside of checks and balances and separation of powers, it is a political ideology that he holds that is very backwards in looking at police violence against black and brown people.
That sounds like the Antichrist to me.
Let me conclude here about the economic implications of Comey's speech. He alluded to his role in supplying police departments with military-grade weapons such as assault rifles, armored vehicles, and helicopters. Quote, "Over the past 6.5 years, my administration has invested more than $2 billion to retain or hire 10,000 police officers. Right now, we're helping make sure departments throughout the country have the equipment they need," end quote. So Obama's speech, and more importantly, his record in supporting cover-ups of police killings and exoneration of killer cops, and his endorsement of police military military crackdowns both in the United States and overseas against protests demonstrate that his differences with Comey are of an entirely secondary and tactical nature. The Obama administration has sought to obscure its unequivocal support of the police with hypocritical gestures of sympathy for the victims of police violence and two-faced statements of solidarity with, quote, and I, it kills me when he says this, communities of color, because until we actually break down what communities of color are, meaning we're talking about a systemic problem against black people or against brown people or against working class people. He doesn't want to break down this communities of color quote. And that's a problem. That's why we can never get to the heart of what the issue is
and why
the police culture, not racist police officers, but a systemic racist police system operates. We can't get to that. We can't get to that until the not only the federal government acknowledges that the communities of color is basically a facade to not address those issues.
Okay, but Gus, we're still living in slavery. The only difference right now is that we're getting paid about $9-$10 an hour, which back then we didn't get paid anything. And over all these hundreds of years, we're still being treated as slaves, and it's still the same as it was back when everything started.
Well, I do agree that we do exist in a colonial state where we are colonized people in the sense that, you know, I try not to use the term slavery when looking at this because, like I said, that's a distinct system where you had unfree labor that was like, you know, that, I mean, it was a distinct thing. It was a distinct system. Whereas in now we exist as deproletarianized people where we are losing our working class credentials and taking positions as sub working class, getting jobs that don't pay the bills, that don't have benefits, that are low skill way of working where the rest of the high skill working class jobs are leaving the country. So I think that's where we're at right now, where that we have become deproletarianized or sub working class.
That's a very interesting concept, man, and something that I hadn't been thinking about or really exposed to.
Yeah, that's exactly where we're at right now, in that we can't, you know, every system transformation is key to looking at our position in our social conditions. We started off as slaves in agricultural capitalism. Mm-hmm. That leaves when the Industrial Revolution comes in and slaves leave the plantations with the general strike. Then you have the industrial capitalism come in, factory workers, such and such. The working class is created in 1915, the modern day working class for existence. You know, you can go back and working class for slaves and poor white laborers, but the modern working class was created, the industrial working class. But then you get to where we're at now in the 1960s and 70s when neoliberalization came about, and you had a process where you took something, and there were too many gangs in the 60s and 70s for workers across the globe. There were too many movements and almost a tipping point where workers were pushing for good things to happen and get some progressive revolutionary ideas. But then the problem happened that neoliberalization just flat out destroyed this idea, and private property took hold of everything. So the main thing that we want to make sure we emphasize when we talk about slavery versus where we're at right now, we have become deproletarianized. We are no longer working class people. We are struggling within an oppressive system that takes away our ability to function and live off of ourselves anymore. I mean, that's exactly where we're at right now. So yeah, I mean, I agree with you that it is a very similar system to slavery, but I think it's better to put in the context of colonialism, that this is a colonized position, whereas in we are dominated, and we are dominated, we are the subjugated, and there is consent to our domination based off of the fact that we do get tax breaks, or we do go to public school for free, and we do believe that there is a police force. And I'm quoting for people that can't see me, that they're there to protect us. But in fact, those things don't exist, but they're used as domination tools to have us consent and be subjugated, colonized people. I mean, that's exactly the position we're in right now. And it doesn't help that we have a federal government or a president who supports policing increased military policing in our country and also in other countries. That's a problem.
It is a problem.
And that should let people know that we should stop looking for the federal government, stop looking at these political debates and all this stuff on television and who's going to be president in 2016. Right. That stuff doesn't matter. We need to build our communities and we need to build with each other. And dude, and do, like I said, the only way we're going to be able to restructure something is we're going to have to go in and change the culture and these institutions like education and, police structure. I mean, just seriously, we have to go in and we have to turn those things inside out. And that's how you restructure society.
Change the way our communities think.
Exactly.
The way that's the average person thinks out there.
Exactly. And that's the only way liberation we will get liberation and we will be able to lift these things up. So we have to build upon ourselves and not worry about what the state is doing, because it's a police state that doesn't have our best interests at heart. We can't build with them because they want to suppress us. Comey says it. For those that are listening and don't believe me, the FBI director has actually said he is seeking to suppress anybody that speaks out against police brutality. His statement.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, well, I'm saying that surprised you. I'm saying, though, like the general people believe that, you know, you speak
there.
Exactly. And we have to make sure that we break that. It's going to take time and it's going to be exhaustive, but we have to do it. We have to put forth the effort. And that's the way that we can actually progress in liberation.
Okay, but if we put forth the effort and start more movements, then they're going to bring out the tanks anyway.
Well, not necessarily. Because again, the thing is, if you build social movements and you build them massively and you politically educate people at such a level, then we're going to start taking institutions, you know, having more teachers and different principals and school systems that have the same ideology that we have. Right. We could start putting those people in churches, right? That have the same ideology that we have, and then we start putting them in other institutions that bureaucracies this country is.
Right.
And then at that point, there's no chance that they can use any type of military tactic to, you know, and the problem with that is that it's a long process and people aren't, this new age that we're in, these new millennials, they're not so into long processes, and that's what it's going to take for us to really go in and actually
They
push
don't know
forward.
That the effect that this is going to have on their future.
Exactly.
And especially our younger kids.
Yeah.
And that's what political education, and that's why it's so important to actually talk about social conditions with kids and adults at the same time and going out to communities and doing these things. And that's what we have to do.
Definitely. Yeah. So let's pick that up again next week. Yeah. We've been running a little bit long here. You've been listening to the World Labor Hour here on WEFT in Champaign. As Dave Johnson says, be safe and power to the people. I'm going to leave you with a little bit of a Halloween inspired tune here. This is from Lee Scratch Perry doing a song called Scary Politicians, where he just talks about bombs going off and things. And then we'll join the Union Edge already in progress. But here's Lee Scratch Perry with Scary Politicians. And join us again next week for another fascinating show here on the World Labor Hour on WEFT Champaign.